Welcome to Combo Smite, your weekly battle report podcast for casually serious players.
Welcome to Combo Smite. My name is Mark. I play Signar and Menoth.
And I'm Nick, and I'm currently playing Retribution.
Oh my god, he's back! He has returned. Triumphant and glorious victory for Nicholas against the forces of New Zealand. How was your trip to New Zealand, sir?
It was amazing. Everything everyone has said about Down Under, or no, that's a different place, but the other side of the world is true. The toilets do in fact flush the opposite way. The
Get water out of town.
The water Seriously? Comes spilling. Yeah, comes spilling out of the top of the toilet every time.
Yeah. Serves me right for saying
I didn't. I did not think that it's that it would make such a big difference. But.
Was it weird standing on your head the entire time you were there?
Yeah, right. I got really lightheaded.
So this is the first half of one of our tournament podcasts. So this is being recorded days / possibly weeks in the future, probably just days. We are going to be talking about specifically Nick's Retribution Ontario Team Championship lists. We were all forced to lock in our lists 6 weeks in advance.
Which we're not bitter. We're not bitter.
I'm not bitter.
Scott, Daryl is Scott.
Daryl is very bitter.
We're not bitter, Scott.
Hey, whatever. It's just par for the course.
Daryl was the bitterest.
But. Yes, so the bitterest snowflake. I do think it's a little egregious. Try not to use that word too much, but hey,
you do that word. You use that word egregiously. So
yeah. I do. It's an egregious use of the word egregious. Okay, but before we get into that, news and announcements. Keep in mind, folks, that because we're recording these out of sync, the news and announcements may be slightly out of date, but if they are, we will insert them seamlessly so nobody will know the difference.
That never happens.
Never happens. In fact, most of the time I go out of my way to make sure the seams are as visible as possible, just because I find it amusing. However, upcoming tournaments, the Ontario Team Championship, taking place in 6 weeks, obviously. So we're going to be talking about that. It's going to be a great deal of fun. If we can get everybody in the same room to do it, I think it'll be cool. We'll need multiple microphones, but we've made it happen in the past. I have hopes for it in the future. The big Southern Ontario Open is coming up in about 6 months, so plenty of time to plan for it and set it aside. Reserve it now. I, unfortunately, will not be able to attend this year because I'm doing, quote, professional development, end quote. I'm going to the science fiction convention, science fiction writers convention that's taking place.
That's the long version. The short version is just you suck.
Yeah, it's true.
You suck. You totally suck.
Yeah, placing Ad Astra in front of you guys. I may show up for some late games because I doubt the science fiction convention will run quite as long as the Ontario Open will. But yeah, enormously fun time. Cannot recommend it enough. In other news and announcements. News and announcements. When we recorded this a couple weeks ago, I don't think we thought there'd be so much news, but yet there has been. Privateer Press has released yet another errata, although they're calling this one a dynamic update. Nick, how do you feel about the dynamic update?
So why don't we talk about what it was first?
Okay, so it's not a full errata. It's basically just a bunch of tweaks that they've done, but for all intents and purposes, it is an errata. I'm really not that clear on the differentiation between the two, but whatever. Do you want to talk about the major ones, or you just want to go in order from the first to the last?
Let's just talk about the major ones.
Okay, so the most significant change, in my opinion, is the High Reclaimer. His feat has been changed such that the models have to be resurrected completely within 3 inches of the unit commander and within the High Reclaimer's control range. I think it used to be 5 inches, so it's been reduced a bit. And
no,
the
you
model...
should just be in command.
Oh, there you go. And models that were destroyed this turn cannot be returned as a result of resurrection. So you can't kill your own unit commander, your own Knight Exemplar officer, for example, and then feed it back to extend the chain of your resurrection. So this basically takes the assassination the High Reclaimer was infamous for and tones it back to a merely an attrition feat.
Yeah, it seems pretty good. I think this was a good change, and the threat ranges that High Reclaimer could pull off with his units were pretty batshit insane.
Yep.
Previously, and I think this kind of just tones it down a bit, so it's kind of in the range of reasonability.
Before anybody asks, we already did talk to Daryl about this errata, and he is, quote, very happy, end quote. He doesn't play his high reclaimer list assassin-y anyways. He's an attrition high reclaimer player, so it won't see a big difference for him. But I do think it will make playing against the high reclaimer a lot more enjoyable. You don't have to be constantly...
I actually want to disagree with you there a little bit. The problem with Daryl playing high reclaimer is that he'll often go for the stupid assassinations just because he can get like two guys onto a caster and he'll go for it. And now that he can't reach out and touch that far away... I feel like he's going to probably use his feet more intelligently in the future.
Fair, fair. For more about Daryl and his High Reclaimer play, listen to last week's podcast again. Okay, so Daryllus, that is Montenebra's character attachment, has received some changes. His Spell Slave is now a magic ability. And he has three spells: Doom Spiral, Range 8, Pow 12, which if it hits a Warjack, the Warjack controller takes D3 points of damage. Empower, which is just removes disruption, gives a focus point. And then Tune Up, which is all attack and damage rolls from its next basic attack are boosted.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff there. So they took a model with Soul Slave or a Spell Slave that had no spells to slave. Basically, and they actually gave him stuff to do now. So he's not like over the top crazy, but hey, he's useful now, so that's good.
Yeah, that's a good thing to have. All right, Nick, why don't you take the next one? Actually, why don't you take the next two?
Okay, so the big one, probably the biggest one in my opinion, is that Tuna took a nerf bat to the face.
Yep.
Basically, the main thing is her feet went to turn instead of round, which means that the immunity to melee attacks is only on her own turn and not on the opponent's turn, which is, previously it was considered predominantly a denial feat because of that whole no melee attacks the next turn. But it also did have the threat range increaser on it as well. And I think maybe free charges. I can't remember now. Now it is, of course, no longer going to be much of a denial feat. It's more of a alpha strike feat.
Correct.
So it's been basically transformed by just that one little word change from round to turn. I don't think that Una is remotely unplayable. Because of this nerf, although it is really good, it is probably going to very negatively affect maybe some of the people playing her at OTC because they might be locked into a list which is no longer very optimal.
Right. Tim Banks has already gone on the record to say that Una is still fantastic and super playable, and no, he doesn't mind being locked into her. But once again, folks, Tim Banky is the specialist snowflake in existence.
I feel like sometimes he just wants to be contrary to people that are upset.
If he was anything besides like one of the top five players in Canada, possibly in North America, I would take umbrage with his statements. But the fact is, he is so good, he can get away with saying things like that. So
sure. So Una is not destroyed. She's not killed. She's totally fine. Certainly weaker than she was before, but still a very reasonably competitive caster, in my opinion. But I do think that some of the people that took her to OTC are locked into their lists are kind of screwed by it. That's the only thing.
Well, the OTC is divide and conquer zero, so they'll be fine.
They can just, they have to play Wormwood all day, boo-hoo.
Oh, no.
And secondly, a stealth nerf to Una, but a more direct nerf to the Scarsfell Griffin. It lost Long Leash. So she can no longer do the shenanigans that she would normally do from 18 inches away. More than that. She's 28 inches away. And the Scarsfall in general is going to not be able to do those shenanigans that it used to do with other casters as well. I think is probably fine. So the PPU's justification for doing this to the Scarsfall was that it was so much better than the other Griffins that... That they never get taken,
right.
And so they want to tone it down to bring it back in line. But I mean, I don't know, I think it's a bit misguided. Only that, only one of them got played because it was the only one that was playable. It wasn't like they were like, oh, I want to play Griffins, but this is the only one worth playing. It's like none of these Griffins are good at all, but this one's the closest thing to playable, so I'll put it on the table. And they just took the one that was the closest to playable and they knocked it down. I feel like. Yes, it was a problem that the Scarsfell was too much better than the other ones, but they needed to buff the shitty ones, not knock down the reasonably playable one.
I mean, it's six of one, a half dozen of another.
Well, no, it's not.
I'm on because, the other side of the fence where I think all the Griffins were perfectly playable, but the Skarsfells were actually so much better than everything else that they were the only ones that got table time. I agree with Privateer Press on this, that I think all the Griffins are good. It's just that the Skarsfells were such value for their points that you would never take any of the other ones. And so now, all of them are more or less equivalent, and therefore you might choose the Skarsfell or the Rotterhorn or the whatever the hell the other one is.
You're wrong. The Skarsfell is still a lot better than the other ones, so even without Long Leash, it's still better.
Well, it gets an extra attack, I think. So.
And an extra strength as well, or an extra point of damage, which is a big deal.
Yeah.
Anyway, the other two Griffins are still unplayable compared to the Skarsfell, really. Also, it has stealth, they don't. That's a bit. That is a massive deal. They haven't actually fixed anything. They've just made the one Griffin that was seeing table time not as good. That's all I've done. But
I respectfully disagree.
Yeah,
okay. The other change is the Cater theme force. You can no longer sack pawn onto gun carriage, which was kind of ridiculous in the first place.
It was a bit dumb.
And for every Winter Guard unit, one heavy warjack in the army gains advanced move. I don't know what that used to be.
It was just you get it for taking the theme force.
Oh, okay, there you go. So fewer heavy warjacks now get advanced move.
Well, and more so just that you have to take Winter Guard in order to get advanced move. Because people would just basically take the theme force, take jacks, and they would advance move. And it was amazing, right? Like, that's obviously amazing. And now you actually have to take units of Winter Guard in order to have advanced move stuff.
Yeah. Also of note, it says that it removes the unintended jankiness of Scrapjack, allowing the Old Witch to feed into the opponent's deployment zone on turn one. Yeah. Okay, so other changes real quick.
Hold on. I want to know, how does that change anything?
Oh, because it doesn't have advanced move anymore.
Why doesn't it?
Because it only applies to heavy warjacks and Scrapjack.
Got it. Okay, I didn't get that part.
Yeah, it's all good. Because, I mean, really, Kator's only got one type of warjack. It's only got one light warjack in the entire faction. It's only Scrapjack with that effect. Okay, so other changes real quick. Thunderhead got a very small buff in that he doesn't target with his pulse anymore. It just hits crap, which is good.
There was a conflict there because...
Stealth.
It was such a weird corner case thing. He would miss the stuff between 5 and 6 inches away.
Yes.
But only if it was the one he picked as his target.
Ridiculous.
Right? Because he would do a star attack, he'd have to pick his target, which could be any model within his front arc, anywhere in his targeting thing. But if he picked a model that was between 5 and 6 inches away, the attack would go off, everyone else would still be hit, but that one model would be missed because of the wording of stealth and that it always trumps... never trumps always or something like that.
Yeah.
And so it was such a dumb interaction. they just made it so he doesn't have to target anymore, which is great.
Yeah. There were a couple changes to the Pain Giver Taskmaster in Scorn. There was a couple theme changes.
Most of them were just like clerical, weren't they?
The Storm Division one. You're talking with the Pain Givers or the Theme Forces?
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, so the Theme Forces, the Storm Division, can now take Stormsmith Stormcallers as well as their solos. And the Retribution no longer says Shail model units. It now says Shail solos, units, and battle engines. So you can now take the Archandric Force Generator in the Forges of War Retribution theme.
No, you cannot, because it's not a Shail battle engine.
Oh, hey. Really?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. You guys are getting a Shail battle engine coming up.
No, probably not. it's just leaving the possibility. The AFG is a Vire battle engine, which is annoying. But So Storm Division one, it's letting you take a cluster of three Stormsmiths as one of your free slots or whatever in that tier list. Any chance that that's something you'd actually want to take?
No.
Not worth free, eh?
Absolutely not. Stormsmith Stormcallers are not worth free. The problem is that there are other 5-point options that are so much better for free than the Stormsmith Stormcallers are for free. So the first thing you're taking is Savio. He's 6 points. He's unquestionably worth free. And then after that, you're taking Squire or Storm Stormblade captains or
sure, that makes sense.
All that sort of stuff. And then, you know, if you have 100 million free points, yeah, eventually you take the Stormcallers. But they're just, I won't say they're unplayable trash, but they're just not good in 95% of the cases. So, okay, so that is it for the errata. You can check out the entire thing online, obviously. Privateer Press has it available in their errata documentation, although it still says January for the document. It is now February, updated for it. I know a lot of people are very happy with this dynamic update in that it kind of proved Privateer Press can still do a delicate touch when they're fixing things.
Well, I mean, a lot of the stuff in the previous errata was making a lot of people question that. There was a lot of stuff that seemed like an over compensation.
Yes.
Where, like, there was a complex interaction that had four or five moving parts, and every single individual part got the crap nerfed out of it.
Yes.
So the effect of the nerf was far more than the sum of its parts.
Yeah.
And the Mad Dog is the perfect example. It's basically unplayable trash now because everything that was good about it got taken away bit by bit.
Yeah.
It's not the way that I think most people think they should be doing it. It should be the deft touch. Like, and this was a perfect example. You know, they took a couple of problem models and they give them a little tweak and now everything's good. I mean,
yep.
They took these powerful boogeyman casters that everyone was having to tech for, and they were a problem in the meta, and they tweaked them just enough that now they're still really strong, but they're not over the top crazy anymore. And so, like, it was just an amazing example of just, you know, tweaking without wrecking them.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Also of note, at least of interest to me, the Stormlances have once again emerged immune from the errata bat. They have not been nerfed in any way, and I had a very long discussion online with a fellow Signar player who believes that the Stormlances should not and will not be nerfed because they are fair and balanced. I am not of that opinion.
I'm not sure exactly how much he'd been smoking.
His basic argument boils down to the fact that the Stormlances are the only thing in Signar that can make us go toe-to-toe with the other broken models in other factions. So our Stormlances are your Sentinels, or our Stormlances are, Sentry Stone for Circle. Like, every faction has that one or two units that just are, you know, above the curve. And if you nerf Stormlances, Signar doesn't have anything. That's his argument. I still don't agree. I still think that Stormlances are so far ahead of the power curve of cavalry that every other cavalry piece has to catch up.
But I do think that...
I think
that they should get a point increase as like kind of like a start and nothing else, you know, like they shouldn't get ripped apart. Like a 2 point point increase, and then, but not just that, but make something else in the faction better, you know, like I don't know, like give I don't know, say
Arcane Tempest Gun Mage's brutal damage instead of crit brutal.
That's too much. I was thinking, like, make Storm Guards suck less somehow. I don't know.
Yeah, give them a point of two.
Force Barrier. That's something.
Ha, they have it.
Do they actually Force Barrier?
The Silver Line Storm Guard. Oh, no, they have a Polarity Field. Sorry.
That's different, yeah.
Yeah, my apologies.
But Storm Guard needs some love.
Yeah,
they're both pretty terrible. What I'd like to see is Privateer do some of this thing where they tweak like the best thing in the faction down like a hair, and the shittiest thing in the faction up like six hairs.
Yeah, I think that would be cool. I also stand by my statement. I mentioned it previously, but I'll mention it again, that every cavalry model in the game should have a default 2-inch melee range. Period. Full stop.
That would certainly do a lot for Vengers and Desters in particular.
Yeah. It would also do quite a bit for Ulans, because Ulans have also got that stupid lance rule. So.
Yep. Oh, and also Steelhead Cav that have the 1-inch melee that really just... Oh, it's horrible.
Yeah. No question. Okay, so that's it for news and announcements, unless you can think of anything else, Nick?
It's not it for news and announcements. So the errata dropped earlier this week, and just last night, there's a couple just little tidbits of stuff dropping out on the forums that I want to talk about, just because it was just interesting. He would, like, there were some people that were just talking about the state of War Machine and yada 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 blah blah blah. And Matt Wilson came in and actually dropped some insight into some stuff on the forums, mostly talking about just really generic stuff about their new philosophy with the whole community integrated development and all this other stuff. And it was just generally cool to hear what he had to say. But he did drop some tidbits about some upcoming stuff. One of them is that they're developing multiple, like they have like multiple factions on the go, and I don't know, like, there's no time frame given for this, but like it's just interesting to hear that they're currently developing multiple factions.
Yep. Yeah, I concur.
But I guess that probably goes without saying. But also that he was saying that minion players could expect something on a huge base within a year, so it's strongly implied that they're going to be getting a Gargossel.
Obviously they're going to be getting another battle engine. Obviously.
That would be hilarious if you did that. But no, I mean, like, they're probably getting a Colossal, but that's cool. I'm happy.
Yeah, it is cool. Yep.
The long-awaited Dracodile, maybe?
Yes.
Cool. He also said that the new faction is going to basically take up all the releases for July, August, and September.
Yep.
So it's going to be, so if the stuff that you're waiting for doesn't come out by June, you're not getting it until October, so yeah, it's going to suck for everybody.
I imagine there'll still be a couple that they slip in. Yeah. But
it's going to start with 6 casters as well.
Which is impressive.
So it's going to start with more casters than Convergence has.
Yes!
Which is funny. But also, apparently, this is going to be actually a similar thing as Convergence. There are going to be a limited faction. They're not going to be included with their regular releases. They're going to be just like Convergence, basically. Convergence, yeah, for Hordes, which actually kind of bums me out a bit. I wasn't particularly interested in this faction, but I mean, I was always open to it. If they look interesting, then I might be piqued, but I'm definitely less likely to want to pick these guys up now that I know they're going to be a limited faction.
Yeah. I mean, we can always hope for something like the Cephalix, which are, you know, a sub-faction, but that seems unlikely.
I mean, these guys are supposedly, they're a faction, not a sub-faction, for sure. Yeah.
I'm with you. I think the Convergence, especially for Convergence players, like the fact that they've been consistently ignored, they've gotten their erratas, they're up to date, they're still playable, you know, they're still certainly competitive, there are some great models in Convergence, but I mean, I feel like they deserve something every couple months.
They have gotten a Colossal and a Battle Engine since the book dropped.
That's true.
I don't think the Battle Engine was in the book. It might have been.
It was in the book. It just, the model didn't exist yet.
Okay, so it was just, so the only thing they've gotten since the book first dropped was the second Colossal then. So yeah, I mean, Convergence has not had a lot of love. I mean, I expect they are going to get a theme book like everyone else coming up. Yeah. The thing is, it's not like Privateer didn't say that was going to be the case, though.
True.
So, I mean, it sucks for those people that they're not getting anything, and kind of like, Privateer did say that they're going to be like a limited release faction, but they didn't necessarily make it clear how limited. Yeah. So, a lot of people are still quite disappointed about that, and I've seen a lot of people that are just like, wow, I mean, like, nothing's come out at all for so long, I guess I'm just going to sell my Convergence because it just, they're not down for that kind of stagnancy.
Yeah.
Whatever. So.
Yep. I mean, even if we take the example of Retribution, I still honestly feel that Retribution is just doesn't have the model count. It doesn't have the variety that any of the other factions do.
Honestly, for me, mostly it's the Warjacks that we need more of. I think we need more heavies and lights.
Well, I think you need more Warjacks, more heavies, more lights, and more Warcasters.
That too.
You know, and it's just the fact that it's been so long now, and it seems that Privateer Press has given up on the concept of catching Retribution up, and they're just keeping them at pace where they are. So
I agree with you. I don't think they have any intention of catching Ret up, and I don't think they need to catch up. I mean, they just need more diverse releases. That's all. I mean, they don't need to have the same amount of casters as Signar and Kador, because they've been out for like, what is it, like 5 or 10 years less than Signar and Kador? They're never going to have the same amount of releases, and that's fine. It's increasing the diversity is something that would be good for Ret. But
That stated, the list healer.
We have digressed.
Yes, the list healer is phenomenal. Go buy one. Okay, is that it, Nicholas?
That is it for news and announcements, as far as I know.
Excellent. Let us move on to the first half of the podcast, which we already recorded.
This is the second draft.
So any other news and announcements? Helios is now on the shelves. I know that because Nick has built and assembled and painted his. Talk just showed up. Tristan's on the shelves. I think Fiora 3 is now available. There's a couple other models. Nothing that struck me as particularly notable. Nick, can you think of anything?
Well, I could bring up the release stuff. Tristan, Eye of Truth, and Helios just came out this week.
Oh, Eye of Truth. I forgot Eye of Truth.
And, I mean, previously Fiora 3, that's something.
Yeah.
Is she okay? I haven't seen her on the table at all.
Her feat's a little underwhelming, but her spell list is... Her feat looks a little underwhelming, but her spell list is fantastic. So I suspect she'll still see table time. And cavalry casters, almost any cavalry caster is playable these days. I'm sorry, Cray. You're still trash. Okay.
I agree, but it never ceases to amaze me how everybody has this Cray list they want to try, and they're trying to force this guy to work, but he's so bad.
If Tim Behnke was on the podcast right now, he'd be telling us about the fact that Cray is actually the best Signar Warcaster.
It never ceases to amaze me how whenever I think something's totally garbage, Behnke always wants to prove me wrong.
And he does.
and I mean, yeah, you're right. He usually does. But that's beside the point.
Yeah, it's not you specifically. It's just someone will mention to Behnke and
it's not me. It's not me. Anyway, fun times. Okay, so where were we here?
Let's talk about your two lists.
Yeah, so we're going to a tournament this weekend. Mark's running it, so he's not going to play in it, but I am. So I'm bringing a list pairing. It happens to be the same list pairing that I'm playing at the Ontario Team Championship. If you guys, if everyone out there is, you know, worried about the Commos Might team, as you probably, you know, shouldn't be, listen up and you'll get wind of all of our secret tech.
That only accounts for, I think, you, because I'm pretty sure I won't be airing anyone else's tournament analysis until after the OTC, but we will see how things fall out.
Well then.
We'll see.
Okay then.
Yeah, so if you want to take tech specifically against Nick, here's your opportunity. God, I cannot speak English today. Okay, so real quick, the Ontario Team Championship, just so everybody knows, it's a WTC-style event, five-man teams. Each team has... each man has two lists. You cannot have the same Warcaster repeated across anyone in your five-man team. So if I'm taking Signar and Nick was also taking Signar,
do we really need to talk about OTC right now? We're just talking about lists, right?
So. Yeah. Just giving the framework for why you're in the situation.
I swear, we're going to talk about OTC enough in the coming month or two. So,
so true. Okay, so with that aside, let's talk about your list. Nick, which one do you want to talk about first?
Let's talk about Alara.
All right.
First of all, my pairing is Ilara and Helena.
Mm-hmm.
So they're both kind of answer lists. In just broad strokes, Helena is basically it's a tier list. It's the new Retribution tier list that got released earlier this month, and it is just a ball busting anti ranged list. Basically, anybody who's running like a ranged pairing can't play into me.
Right.
And if they have like a ranged list and a melee list, I know they basically can't drop their ranged list into me.
Yes.
Because the Helena list is just so ball busting against guns that they just can't do anything.
Yeah. I like it.
And the Alara list is just kind of like a toolboxy list that can do a lot of different stuff. So let's just start talking about it. It's kind of a weird list. It is Alara with two Helioses.
I like it already.
A Chimera for an Arc Node, three Arcanists, Lys Healer, and two units of Stormfall Archers. There have been the Alara double Helios list is something that's been kicking around in the Ret community a bit since Helios was first announced, and more so in Mark 3. He's pretty ball busting colossal, has really, really powerful, amazing abilities. He's cheap as hell. And so taking two of them and it offers different challenges than any list that might have just one because of the ability of this guy just to push stuff around just ridiculously. Because each Helios can push any, you know, any model or models, a combination of 9 inches anywhere it wants it to go. And so with two of them, you can push something 18 inches. And just like the possibilities when you can move your opponent's models around with that magnitude is just like virtually endless.
No argument whatsoever.
So, like, some weak points in the list is that because it centers a lot on the Helioses and what they can do to push things around, really doesn't like stuff that can't be moved, doesn't like Colossals.
Imagine that.
I mean, it's not the end of the world. The list can still deal with them. At least it certainly could deal with one, but it probably doesn't want to fight a double Colossal list. The Chimera is there, most importantly, to apply Marked for Death. Because that's going to be the key to making sure your Helioses are hitting reliably with their guns and their fists. Mm-hmm. It's going to be the key to making sure that my Stormfall Archers that are kind of hanging in the back and just firing brutal shots into all the stuff, it makes sure they're going to hit as well. It also gives them an answer for stealth.
Yep.
So that's all good stuff. And that's basically the list. So the idea is that if I'm up against some kind of heavy spam, this list will just kick the crap out of it just by pulling in a heavy or two every turn and just punching the crap out of it. Yeah. And so like you can move your Helioses up, pull a heavy in, kill it, move another Helios up, push the rest of the heavies back so they're out of threat range. And there's a lot of really cool stuff you can do just to kind of control your opponent and where they're going to put their stuff. It's a really fun list to play because there's a lot of possibilities that you can do with the two Helioses. Yeah. Just pushing stuff around. One of the reasons why I really like Double Colossal with Ilara is her Field Marshal actually matters a lot more when it's a model that isn't going to die and has a really, really, really strong retaliatory strike that you don't necessarily want to take.
Yes.
Her Field Marshal retaliatory strike is way scarier on Helios than it is on any Red Heavy. So.
Also of note, it's extremely powerful on Warjacks that can't be knocked down or made stationary, because a lot of the times, you know, prevent your retaliatory strike by
very doing
things like that.
Yeah. So. Very true. So that's kind of the general game plan. Helioses pull things in, Ilara puts on Mark for Death, and then Helioses can push it around, Stormfall Archers can light it up with Brutal Shots. List Healer is there really just because I had 3 points, because it used to have Lanissa in the list.
Right.
I didn't feel it was worth dropping an Arcanist to keep her, but maybe I could be wrong about that. I don't know.
I think the list healer, whatever. I think Liss. The healer. Yeah, I think she's a half decent inclusion for 3 points.
So. I mean, she's a utility solo. She can heal stuff up on need. She's also just a really good scenario piece because if anything dies within her command, she gets to move a full advance before, like in the maintenance phase or something like that. Yeah. Which means that she can potentially move like. 18 inches towards a flag in a turn when you really need it kind of thing. And that can just be really, really helpful.
Yeah, it's like a mini virus feat.
No, a list healer is always a really good use of points. If you ever have 3 points you don't know what to do with, definitely consider a list healer. I mean, other models that could go into that slot would be like a ghost sniper, but I feel like the list healer is just when you need her, she's going to be so clutch to the game. So, like, a Ghost Sniper will do work in almost every game and put, like, 3 points of damage on stuff once in a while, and it'll die eventually. That's fine.
Yep.
But he's probably worth 3 points. But the Liss Healer is the one that's going to actually win you the game because she's there when the time you need her. But that's, like, maybe every fourth game. And in those 3 games before that, she was just wasted points. Right. But the one time she's going to win you a game. And so that's why she's kind of worth it anyway.
Yep. No argument. Okay, so let's take a moment to delve into the list construction here specifically. Is there anything about the list other than possibly swapping out the list healer and the Arcanist for... I just completely blanked on her name.
Lanissa,
good God. Do you have any 1-point options in faction?
Just Soulless Escorts. I could put a Soulless Escort on my Stormfalls or something.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So you could or the Void Tracers. Are they 1 point?
They are 2 points.
Ah, too bad. Those guys are great.
Yeah, they're really good. I do like them too.
So other than that, what kind of variations do you think you would put on this? Like, I don't think the list would work as well with the Hyperion, despite the fact that I love Hyperion, because really the movement push-pull shenanigans of the Helios, plus the dual attack.
I mean,
I'm sure everybody knows this, but Helios can both punch things and then pull in or push away other things after.
Yeah, no, it is really, that is the reason why he's so awesome. But it would still work with the Hyperion. It would just make the options more limited. So like one of the things you can do is you can trample forward with your Helios, and then you can just take your shots. So you can get like just an incredible threat range where you trample 8 and then or 10 with boundless charge up. Or does that not affect tramples? I know why not.
No, just charge. Just
it up. Yeah. But anyway, you can trample up your 8 and then start shooting 12 from there. I think it's 12. I better look that up.
Yeah, it's 12. Yep.
Yeah, 12 from there. So it's like a 20-inch threat on pulling things in. And your Helios can trample forward and then pull something in 9 inches, like up to one thing, 9 inches. Or just pull a couple things in just far enough so the other Helios can get to one, basically. And sometimes just one Helios can trample up, pull a bunch of stuff in, and then buy attacks on whatever gets close enough to it. There's a lot you can do. But ideally, one Helios tramples up, pulls some stuff in, the other Helios charges in, and then gets its full activation killing heavies. That's kind of the way it goes. And then that second Helios is going to be hitting at like PS25 with concentrated power and scything touch.
Yeah.
And so it will do serious work.
Just for clarity, you get to make both your initial melee attacks and all three of your range attacks just for free, right?
Yes, it's true. So the second Helios that charges in can do its charge attack and all that stuff, and it can still pull things in and do other stuff. And this is the crazy part. There could be just a storm pod sitting in the middle of the table, and then my Helios can charge it, then take its range attacks, pull in your heavies, and then take all of its initials on the heavies I just pulled in.
Well, except for your charge attack, yes.
That's true.
Your charge attack has to be against your charge target, unless your charge target happens to be dead.
Yeah, or you could also use one of your shots to push it out. That wouldn't work on a storm line. but you could use one of your shots that are free, right? To push your charge target away if you didn't want to waste an attack on it.
Yeah, that's an interesting argument. I like that.
Trust me, it's if someone's like screening with some infantry or something, you can totally do that. You charge the infantry and then you push them away and you pull in a heavy and then you just like go to town on it. Like that's the crazy thing with Helios is there's just so much crazy stuff you can do with him because there's just the sky's the limit. Yeah. He's a very, very flexible model. And so the tactic I was just describing, where one, the Helios tramples up, pulls something in, and then the second one goes to town on it, that also works with Hyperion. You can just use Hyperion as your second model, and then it can go in and kill something still at PS25 because it has the same base power strength as Helios does. So it'll do just as much work in melee as the Helios as well. Difference is it also has guns that it can use before you get to that point.
Right. Now you're not really that concerned with stealth tech with your Alara list here, because as you mentioned, Marked for Death removes stealth, right? So if your opponent has a clutch stealth unit or has put Prowl on a unit of Storm Lances, I don't know how you could do that, but let's say you can. Alara can still run the Chimera up and then arc Marks Through Death through that. So you don't really need that big pie plate of death as desperately with this list, but...
No, not really. The double Helios version is definitely, unquestionably, the superior version, in my opinion. But I'm just saying that if you didn't have to or something, you could totally throw Hyperion in there and it would still do a similar thing. It just wouldn't be as flexible. Because that's part of the reason why Helios is so amazing is because that flexibility of being able to do all that stuff in the same turn and it's all free, right? Yeah. So,
I mean, the only real... The Arcanists are so good. Just in general, Retribution Arcanists are really good. It's hard not to take a full load.
The double Stormfalls is definitely a flex point there.
It could be other things.
The Chimera also is not strictly necessary. You don't have to run with the Chimera. I wanted to have a Chimera on the list in order to apply Mark for Death.
Yeah.
A lot of people run different things. I've seen Nis Hunters played with her. For a couple reasons. I mean, they're a decent range unit. They can put out some hurt with range. It's fine. And then you can put Scything Touch onto one of them, charge into a heavy, and then you have your Weapon Masters now PS11 Weapon Masters.
Very significant.
And with their feet turn, they go up to speed 9, and so they charge. They threat 13 inches, which is pretty good. Yeah. It's not as good as halberdiers, but it's still pretty good. And they're a lot more versatile than halberdiers. So yeah. Nyss are definitely something that's good as well. I just like the ball busting ranged output of Stormfalls personally. That's why I chose them. And with Mark for Death on a key target, you can make sure they're accurate as well.
Okay, cool. Okay, let's move on to your first list. Your first list. Let's move on to your second list. Oh, before we do that, you're taking fuel cache with this particular list?
Yes.
And is there a reason behind that? Fuel cache is lights models that hit it on fire and...
It's a cloud.
And the 4-inch cloud.
Yeah, more importantly, it's the cloud. So the idea is that... Alara basically hides in the middle of the table. She can peek out from behind the cloud, kill something, and then teleport back behind it, and she's super safe. That's the main thing, right, is that she has a cloud to keep her safe.
Yep, fair enough. Do remember, folks, that the fuel cache cloud for now is not optional, and you have to be careful with it because it can block your own line of sight if you're not careful. Okay, so let's move on to talking about your Helena list. You are playing Helena in theme, is that correct?
Yes, I am. So you... people that watch the stream, they might recognize the list. It might be identical, or at least it's very similar to the one that Todd was actually testing on the stream for me. I asked him to test it because I wasn't going to have a chance before list lock, because I was on vacation during list lock. So that kind of sucks. But I never had a chance to actually play the theme list. I still have not played the theme list. So I'm going to be playing for the first time at this tournament this weekend, see how it goes. And I'm locked in for OTC, which is amazing. But whatever.
It'll be fine.
Honestly, we're going to have fun. That's the main thing. Everyone's going to have fun, right? Right, guys? Yeah. Right, guys? But anyway. Okay, so it's the list is Magister Helena with Helios, 3 Manticores, a Chimera, and a Hydra.
Mm-hmm.
The Hydra I upgraded from a Chimera just because I had an extra point in the list, and rather than playing a point down with 4 Manticores, is what the core of the list was, I decided to just swap it out for the Hydra, which... I don't know how I necessarily feel, but the Manticores are there actually for a reason, because they're really good. they have like the high volume of fire with the POW 12 boostable guns, and they have the covering fire, and they have really respectable melee. The Hydra costs a point more, and you're losing a lot of that.
Yeah.
What you're getting out of it is the range 15 POW 15 gun.
Right.
And the gun that basically Helios and power up is going to power for you all game long.
So I was just going to say, Helios with a massive battle group is always a good thing.
Yeah, that's the thing. And so, but I'm definitely undecided on if the Hydra is the right call. But it's there, and I'm stuck with it. So,
I think it gives you some interesting versatility into the list. Because I mean, the Manticores are, as you mentioned, they have respectable guns. They're 12-12, aren't they?
They're 12-12. It's a really good gun.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not and huge, I mean, truth be told, the Hydra is a 12-12 gun. It just gets a +3/+3 for having focus on it.
And the rest of the list.
Oh yeah, the rest of the list. So the rest of the list is three Arcanists, and then 2 House Shiel Artificers that are both free, and then a free Silas as well.
Interesting.
So the benefits for the tier list are that for every like so many points of Jax, you get free solos, and I was able to get 3 solos in this list, which is 15 free points.
Now, did you just take 14 did you just take the artificers because of the most expensive solos that are allowed in tier?
Partially. I debated taking 1 Magister and 1 Artificer. The Magisters are actually really useful because they have that whip snap ability. It's a bit tricky to get off because it's only range 6, and so you have to have an enemy within 6, and you have to have a friendly within 3, and so you have to get this kind of weird triangle of stuff going on in order to actually make it work. But it's not as hard as it sounds to get off. It's still a really powerful ability, and it gives, I believe, a 2-inch movement. I forget.
Yep.
It's been a while.
Friendly faction model within 3 inches can advance 2 inches as a result of it. So.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good. And I have to say that having seen it pulled off, it goes off more often than you might think, because Magisters tend not to be priority targets when there are Manticores screaming up the table. So.
But instead, I decided to go for the free Artificers just because they have the resiliency. They're armor 17 with 5 boxes, and they're just a bit harder to kill, slightly harder to kill.
Well, defense 14 against range is pretty damn respectable.
Yeah, it's okay. And you can do things to help keep them a little safer. You can put up their force manipulation ability that makes it so they can't be charged. You put up their force wall ability that gives everything force barrier. within 3 inches of him, so that can give everything +2 against ranged and immune to blast, which is super helpful for really just Helena herself and maybe your Arcanists, but like...
And Helios, can't you?
Well, yeah. Well, Helios has Force Barrier by default.
Oh, okay.
He's base defense 10 with 12, and then defense 12 against ranged. But the rest of your battle group can get it, and then so they go up a point of defense against ranged. So what I like about it is that I can have these guys following around my battle group with deceleration up, or whatever one it's called. I forget now.
Yep.
Deceleration.
Which one?
Deceleration, +2 armor. And so then my whole battle group is going to be like defense 14 and armor like 20 or 21 against shooting.
Right.
Which is just really ball busting. Because the deceleration on the Helios makes him armor 21 against shooting, and then he's defense 12 against shooting all the time, and you can just pop him a focus to do the +2 defense plus poltergeist. It makes him it makes him 14-21 against range with
which
with
is ridiculous Helena.
and it's just really really ball busting and then add that to the tier benefit from this theme list that the whole battle group gets shield guard. and it's just like this list is just almost impossible to take down at range, because like you basically have to boost to hit my heavies because they're a defense 14, or else you're just wasting shots, and so then that's going to take focus away from people that need to boost damage, and it's just like it's brutal. It's a really really good anti-range skew, that's all.
No question. Okay, so we talked a little bit about the Hydra quote upgrade end quote to instead of a Manticore. So 3 Manticores and 1 Hydra. Obviously, you think 4 Manticores is also a viable choice.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it might even be better. I just I settled on this because I never had a chance to play it. So, you know, whatever.
I'd be almost curious if it would be worth dropping one of your mechanics just to go 1 Manticore, 3 Hydras. Because this is one of the few lists that can power 3 Hydras, 2 mechanics and... Helios would still allow you to run 3 Hydras fully fueled every turn, pumping out, you know, range 15, power 15s, and Helena is forcing your opponent to run through your gun line because they're not going to be able to shoot him off the table.
No, I don't think that's the best move. I feel like just the volume of fire of the Manticores is going to be better over time, especially when you factor in Hand of Destruction that you can put on an enemy model. And then all the battle group attack and damage rolls against it are boosted. When you have just the 1 PAL 15 that's boosted for free, you have a very focus efficient Hydra that never spends focus. It just shoots, and then everything's boosted for free. But the multiplication effect you get from Manticores having that is just stronger, because you can get up to 3 boosted PAL 12s, and depending on what armor you're talking about, that's going to be better.
Yeah, you're saying 3 boosted POW 12s per Manticore, so...
Yeah. I mean, it's D3, so it's not actually, but, I mean, on a good day...
Yeah, you can still factor approximately 6 shots as opposed to approximately 3 shots, which is it's not bad. Okay, no, that's a fair point. So what would you consider as variations for this list other than the 4 Manticores?
I mean, taking out a theme. The Helena list that I've been playing the most recently... has been Helena with, I think it's 3 Manticores, Disco, a Chimera, and Max Sentinels, and then some other stuff. That list is really, really strong in the gun lines as well.
I've played into it.
It doesn't have the theme benefits, but it has Disco instead, and so it just means that your stuff is armor 22 against range full game.
Yeah,
and it's armor 25 on feet turn against range, which is really really ball busting.
And then your Sentinels mini feet and
Sentinels mini feet as well, and just there's a lot of stuff in there that's really hard to deal with, and it's also a really good list. And I really really hotly debated if I wanted to take that tried and true list or if I wanted to try this new thing, and I decided that because I was bad at this game anyway, that I'd rather take the so-called fun list, and so that's why I made that decision.
No, that's fair. That's fair. I have beaten that second Helena gunline list, the Disco Sentinels, with Sloan. So I know that, you know, Helena's supposed to be to hotness against gunlines. She's good, no question. But the true one isn't designed for specifically gunline lists. It's an incredible mixed arms list against an opponent who doesn't have a way to cover that distance. So
a lot of that comes down to the player skill sometimes. I'm not sure who you're playing when you played that game, but
well, it also comes down to table. I had a very skilled terrain,
so. Player who's played the matchup, and I mean, and table obviously is it's an huge anomaly there as well. But you know, a skilled Lena player who's played against Sloan specifically for practice is probably going to get the advantage in that game.
Yeah, no, I agree, and it's certainly
like it might only be like a 60-40 or not even that much, but like, but I do think the edge is for Helena in that matchup.
Yeah, I would agree, and I think a big portion of it is whoever makes a mistake first, and
sure.
You know, if you make a small mistake with Sloane, that's it. If your opponent happens to make a small mistake with Helena, that's it, and that's not bad. I'm just saying that I think this list that you've crafted here certainly has a lot more interesting things going on.
The problem with it is it's a lot more one-dimensional because this is very much a anti-gunline skew. It can take on armor because it does have a lot of hard-hitting itself with the Manticores and Hand of Destruction and Helios for just bringing stuff in to be easy pickings for the Manticores to just kind of kill. And the idea is, you know, I can, like, Hand of Destruction something from downtown with Chimera, pull it in with Helios, have a fully loaded Manticore with concentrated power up standing by to just rip it to shreds. And ideally it's going to be so far away from the enemy's front line that it's going to not even be retaliated with. And that's, it seems like it could be good, but I mean, obviously, you know, it's a game you do have to play it. So
yeah, of course. I also, this is me being silly, but I like the concept of you having three Manticores walk up, shoot at an enemy warjack 12 inches away, do all their damage, and then have Helios walk up and push the enemy warjack back out of range. Okay, you go away now.
don't forget as well, Rhythm of War means those Manticores are going to be 15 inches from what they just shot.
Oh yeah, that's right.
So Helena is a weird build in that she is such a hard anti-gunline skew herself while running a really, really powerful and hard to deal with warjack gunline herself.
Yeah. No, I agree. So I'm really curious to see how this will work out.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we've talked about both the lists. Let's talk about the pairing just in brief. You did mention that the overarching scheme is opponent has a gun line and not a gun line. You're forcing them to play the not gun line because Helena will just obliterate their gun
line. Yeah, in theory. I mean, of course, there's always a bit of list chicken there. Like, if they have two lists and one of them would really destroy Helena, but the other one's a gun line, then it becomes a list chicken situation, and it's hard to know what to do in that call. I mean, really, you're rolling a dice at that point.
Yeah. All right, so let's do the standard one-word question-answer period.
Okay.
We'll start with the biggest boogeyman, which at this point is Haley 2.
Lose. it's Helena.
Okay, so you think Helena can take the standard Haley 2 build?
Yeah, I mean, I've played Helena into Haley 2 before. I mean, the builds change, obviously. I'm not sure. What is the most common thing with her in the OTC, actually? Do you recall?
Storm Lances, Thorn. Like
double Storm Lances, Thorn, Stormwall?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. The Stormwall sometimes is a unit of trenchers, but that's unusual with Haley 2.
So, I mean, I've played against builds like that, and I think this list has some really strong game against it.
Yeah. Because Arcane Shield isn't really that big of a deal when you have that many guns, so.
Hand of Destruction goes on a unit, and that unit dies.
So what are you going to be dropping into the, probably Vlad, but in general, the Kador Rocket Spam lists that are seeing a big resurgence?
Definitely Helena, but I'm actually really worried that she doesn't have the beef to deal with so many Rocketeers. Like, they're so fucking broken, man. They're so broken. I don't even... But here's the thing. Only one of the units can get Joe.
Yeah.
So the rest of them have to hit my defense 14 jacks with their rat 5 Rocketeers with signs of portents. It's still good for them, I mean, but it means that they're going to miss more. That's all.
They'll miss half the time. And
I mean, needing nines is pretty good. Like, and if it's not a Vlad, if it's not a Vlad 1 Rocketeer gun line, then I'm set. I mean, defense 14 means they're not hitting crap. So,
yeah, no, that's a fair point. Okay, so let me think. That's Signar, Kador, Menoth, High Reclaimer.
High Reclaimer, lose. No, that one's probably.
Thank God this is a team event, so we can make sure those parents.
Yeah, no. The answer to that one is dodge, dodge, dodge. No, High Reclaimer, probably Helena is going to be the best one for that one, just because you can put down covering fires to get in the way of all's infantry, and high volume shooting will help try to kill them, kind of thing. And if you can get Hand of Destruction, one of the units of Adrian's, for example, you can try to focus fire it down so he can't bring them back.
Interesting. Okay.
I mean, easier said than done, obviously, but it's a chance.
All right. Crix, what is people playing these days?
They don't exist. It's Helena.
Is it Crix?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. That leaves us with mercenaries. Oh, gun bunny lists.
I feel like... so the gun bunny lists, that's actually a tough one, because I think Alara could play really well into that.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing. Pull in a couple gun bunnies, punch them to death, repeat.
But at the same time, it's a gun line list, and so it's totally like, it's totally what Helena wants to play into, and boosted 12s just don't do that good against armor 22. So, or armor 20.
That's an interesting argument. I mean, a large part of your Helena defense is your defense 14, and automatically boosted shots means...
Yeah, I mean, the gun bunnies will hit, that's true. Yeah, but I still think it's pretty good.
Okay, fair enough. So that moves us on to trolls. Probably Madrak 2?
It's like
post nerf, he's not as popular.
For some reason, you're only talking about all the infantry stamp casters. and so that's mostly going to be a Helena type thing. If it's dude swarm, I need the volume of attacks that's in my Helena list.
Right. Well, I'm talking about the lists that are most popular in each of the various factions. I don't know if that's necessarily the case.
Well, you didn't ask about Harkovich heavy spam.
That's true. So Harkovich heavy spam.
Because that's actually the most common cater list out there, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
In the OTC breakdown, he is the most common. Kator caster.
Huh.
By a small margin. It might be worth actually just talking about whoever the top caster is in each of these factions.
Okay, so Harkovich. You said you'd be dropping Alara into that?
I mean, it's a bit... Yes, I would. Part of the problem with this kind of format is that there's a lot of list chicken that goes on, because if it's Harkovich with, you know, a Vlad 1 Rocketeer gun line, one of my lists would destroy... the Harkovich, and one of my lists would destroy the Vlad 1, and so it's total a list chicken situation, in which is just kind of hard to deal with.
Of course. All right, so we recovered Haley 2. Your opponent drops Una 2 into you.
Una 2 is probably going to be Helena.
And what about Wormwood?
Wormwood is Helena as well.
Okay, so for the mirror match, say you go up against Kalissa.
I think it's Helena. Shit, I mean, like, I think I... Did I build a shitty Alara list?
I don't think you bought it... Okay, so what you did, in my opinion, is you built a terrifying Alara list, but you built a terrifying Alara list that you're hopefully going to be forcing your opponents to drop their anti-Alara list, and therefore your Helena list will be better at it.
Who knows? I don't know. That certainly wasn't my intention. That was my intention. I'm amazing.
Amanad Raza, so a million vigilance. No, not vigilance.
Dervishes. Dervishes and Crusaders is the typical. So that's Alara all day long.
There we go.
She basically just pulls in all of his jacks and just murderizes them with the Helioses. Now, whether or not she has the beef to get through that many jacks with just two of her own is pretty rough. I have no idea.
But they're two really big ones.
They are really big. and the idea is that they out-threat.
Yes.
They out-threat them on by a bit because of the pulls.
Yeah.
And that is supposed to be enough to keep them alive, but I just don't know if that's true or not, so...
Well, also, if you're hitting dervishes, I think you're hitting a dice plus 7. So,
it's dice plus 11 on a dervish.
Oh. Oh, sorry, my apologies.
Dice plus 9. Dice plus 9.
Yeah, okay. So I was close. I was
assuming
close.
They are armor 16. Is that true?
I think so. I'd have to look it up. 16, 17 ish. Metal jacks are a little heavier.
So plus 8 or 9, anyway.
Yeah. It's pretty good. Okay, so for Trollbuds, Ragnar, who tends to run an anti gun line.
So that would probably be Alara. Depending on the build, if it was really infantry heavy, it might still be Helena. But basically, I mean, like, you're asking all these questions. If it's heavies, it's Alara. If it's almost anything else, it's Helena.
Fair enough. So. All right. And Mercs we covered. Legion. Oh, hey, what are you dropping to Lilith? Lilith, specifically.
Well, Lilith is obviously Helena. If it's Thagrosh.
Oh, really? It's the magic guns. Of course, of course.
If it's like Thagrosh or like Abby 2, like Beast Spam, then it's Alara. But again, if it's Lilith with Thagrosh too, it's Lich Chicken. Like, who knows what's gonna happen? Yeah.
Chaos. Yeah. All right. Last but not least, Scorn. Oh God. Probably Xerxes 2, I would guess, would be the most common.
Hard to say. Part of the problem with Scorn is that virtually every list has Tiberian in it. And so, you know, Privateer Press and their Infinite Wisdom made a super balanced model that has downsides. not Tiberian.
Right.
And so he's in like every list. That's not true, but he's in a lot of lists.
He's in a lot of them.
And you can't push or pull him. And so the Helios list is a bit sad about that. And so it's actually probably going to be Helena in that matchup as well.
Fair enough. Okay, so that is all of the most terrifying lists that we expect on Saturday. I will be very curious to see.
Ask what Rask.
Fine, Barnabas.
Barnabas? Probably Helena, because I can pull his crap out.
Can you?
Well, it depends. I mean, if it's in the swamp pit, I suppose. But
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I think Alara might actually be the right drop there.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a tough call. Maybe Helena. Who the hell knows? Okay. So I'll be really curious to see how this goes. And I think that's all the questions I have at this point. So now we're going to splice in the second half of the episode.
Oh, caveat as well. I'm borrowing Todd's Helios for my second one, and so if he doesn't have it or if he forgets or something, then I might have to rent something else at the tournament. So I don't know. I'm not sure what I'd do in that situation. So we'll see.
All right, I'll bring an extra huge base, and we'll just put a little flag that says Helios on it.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. All right. Okay. So after we've done our little time warp, we are now back for the second half, where we're going to talk about the results of Nick's tournament. Nick,
do we have to?
How did the tournament go for you?
It went poorly for me. I went 1-2 with a bye. I didn't do well. I have some excuses if you'd like to know what they are.
I would love to. Let's hear your excuses.
Haven't played any War Machine in a month.
Okay.
I was away.
Oh, welcome back from New Zealand. That's right. It's your first podcast.
Thanks. Excuse number one. Excuse number two is haven't played Retribution regularly in like a year.
Okay.
Since
the last OTT.
Pretty much, yeah. Those are my excuses. That's why I suck so hard. I definitely had some problems with clock management, model positioning, remembering my rules, just basically all the things. If you want to make a list of things that I had problems with, you can just put all, and then you can save yourself some time.
All right. Well, let's focus down a little bit here. Let's start with the lightning fast round. Who was your first opponent?
First opponent was a Signar player playing heavy metal theme force with Darius and tons of jacks.
So, hey, Dom.
Dom, yes, that's it. It was Dom. He had Thunderhead,
a Centurion,
a Hammersmith, a Cyclone, and a Hunter, I believe. Cool. Hunter was on Journeyman, I think.
Sure.
I believe that was it. And then he had some Sword Knights and some free stuff as well.
So what'd you drop into it?
I dropped Helena into it because it's Signar.
Okay. And how'd it go?
It wasn't too bad. So I forgot to feat on a key turn, but then he also forgot to feat on a key turn as well. So it kind of canceled out a bit. Okay. I was definitely up on attrition, but I was really, really down on clock. So I kind of had to go for a really, really stupid, bad assassination, or else I was just going to lose. Yep. And so I did, and it failed horribly. Really, the culprit in this game was that I was really just down on clock, and my head wasn't in the game, and I paid the price for it.
Fair.
It was still a close game. It wasn't like I certainly wasn't winning by it was totally anyone's game. I wouldn't necessarily say I was even ahead. Because I took too long considering my options, I had no chance to actually win because I couldn't activate my stuff. It wasn't even activating that was the problem. It was just that I was just thinking about my options too long, and about planning the turn out. And that's mostly due to list familiarity. This was my first time playing this list, I believe.
Right.
Might have been my second. If you recall, the theme forces were released while I was away on vacation, and
yes.
Hey, Todd, test this list for me. So the extent of my practice with this list before I was locked in for the OTC was asking Todd to play it for me twice, and I watched the game on Twitch from New Zealand.
Still dedication, I have to say. Like that's an impressive level of commitment.
I had some downtime. That was the extent of my practice with the list before, and I was satisfied enough with how it played out. I remember Todd not liking it. We have different play styles, so that's,
that doesn't
mean a whole lot. I still liked what I saw on the table, and so I was like, yeah, fine, I'll go with it. It's list familiarity is a big problem for me. That's all. I need to practice this stuff a lot better.
Fair enough. All right, second round.
Second round, I was matched up against a Circle player. He was playing Tanith.
Zach.
He was playing Tanith in the theme force. So it was the one where the Tharn get like free heart tokens and stuff.
Yep.
In his list, he had a Stalker, Gorax. I think that might have been it for beasts. Oh, and an Argus. Then he had one unit of Ravagers, he had Lord of the Feast, he had Blood Trackers with Nula, and a Battle Engine, and some other stuff. And I played Alara into this list.
Okay.
Just because I wanted to practice my second list. I didn't actually even care what he had. I just wanted, I wanted to get both on the table because I had not played these lists yet.
Yep.
So regardless of what it was, I was going to play Alara into it. Because I wanted to get some table time. I didn't care if it was a bad matchup. Practicing bad matchups is just as good as practicing good matchups.
In fact, sometimes it's even better.
A lot of times it's better, yeah. And so because this was primarily just I wanted to get some really good practice in, I dropped that list. And this one, I made some key mistakes. I triggered Vengeance on his blood pack. It's the other ones. The Ravagers. I triggered Vengeance on his Ravagers first turn because I forgot that they had Vengeance.
Oops.
Yeah, and I mean, totally my bad. I mean, it's my responsibility to make sure I know the rules across the table for me.
Yep.
And I basically was just taking pot shots at them. And if I had remembered that they had, like, I moved my Colossal up to just outside their threat range, but then I move up my Archers and just, like, wound one of them kind of thing. I think I actually killed one, but whatever. Like, I killed one and wounded another one. Yeah. And it just wasn't worth triggering Vengeance for, and I didn't need to do that. It was not at all the right thing to do.
So how many Ravagers did it take to kill Helios?
They didn't kill it. I mean, they charged in. He forgot to put Scything Touch on one of them before he did it. And so they did not do that much damage. They took out like maybe a quarter of it, if that. But they're in my face, and I had Helios damaged before he should have been damaged. He should have been the one that went in first, and then killed most of them before they ever had a chance to. Right. But anyway, they got in. Next turn, he did a sweep. He got the entire unit in his sweep.
Nice.
And I missed all but two attacks.
I missed
three of the five, basically.
Nicholas.
Which is pretty horrible.
Yep.
I bought like an attack or two. I think I bought an attack, but then the guy toughed. And so I know. It's just tough is brutal for, you know, wasting just precious activations with expensive models. It really sucks. He killed a couple of Tharn, and I moved up and just did some stuff, and I was just staying out of his threat range as best I could. and I think I put Mark for Death on his blood trackers, and then the Stormfall Archers took out a bunch of them, like took out like all but a couple of them.
Right.
But then he was able to kill the one Helios, and then he was able to. We were playing. The scenario was what's the one with the two flags and the two objectives?
Extraction.
Extraction. And so he was able to score both flags. On a certain sometime. Right. Because it's the problem with this list is that it doesn't have very much scenario presence.
Right.
Unless you really want to shove your models in your opponent's face, because two colossals can contest the board pretty well, but you have to be like. Right, you have to, like, all of your army is in the middle of the table because those two colossals are your army.
Yeah.
So it has a problem. Yeah. He was able to score 2 points, and so then I was kind of in panic mode. I ended up killing his Gorax and his Stalker, but then I didn't have the stuff I needed to contest properly, so he was able to just kill my objective and then score on the flag. To win the game.
Wow.
It was just part of it was. I mean, I think that I had the capability of playing a smarter scenario game than I did, but right. I was just playing a bit too cautious, and so by doing that, I allowed him to score, and that's the kind of thing that I think reps would really help. You know, playing this list more, I need to know, I need to recognize when the right time to commit to the scenario, when's the right time to hang back, and I definitely played it wrong in this game, and he capitalized on it and took the game handily.
Fair enough.
But I don't know, I felt so out of the game this weekend, just like I had no idea what I was doing. I think it's because I'm so used to playing Legion. Right. I've been playing Legion the majority of the last year, and I only switched to Rep because I was really excited about Helios coming out, which you might be able to tell since I have 3 Helioses in my list, in my combination of lists.
You are so excited about Helios, you've been painting Todd's Helios so you can use it.
That's right. True. I'm even painting Todd's Helios so that I can borrow it. I don't currently have a good ret muscle memory at the moment, so right. I'm really hurting from it right now. I'm just losing games left, right, and center.
Fair. All right, so for your lists, what did you find about your Helena list that clicked particularly well? Was there anything where you're like, okay, that's a really good combination, I'm glad I did that?
I really like the Helena list. It didn't really get a chance to show off what it can do, what it does really well is it's just a ball-busting anti-gunline list.
True.
The deceleration, like plus your feet, plus having shield guard on everything. Like my entire list has shield guard, basically, except for the artificers. And so just it's impossible to shoot off the table. Now part of it, like now I also forgot to use some of my rules as well. There was at least one time when my artificer got shot. And I could have shield guarded it off to like Helios or something, which would have been a really good use of it.
Yep.
And I just forgot I had the rule because it's a theme force benefit.
Right.
And that would have been really, really strong when I used it. But what are you going to do? I mean, just I need to learn my rules. So.
Yep. Okay, so same question about your Alara list. Was there anything in that you found particularly good? Was there a strong – was the double Helios particularly strong?
The Alara list is just a bit of a – like a scary ghost jumping around the corner list. I don't know that it's actually good. It just can play into certain matchups really, really well, like heavy spam kind of thing. Yeah. So it's intended mostly to skew matchups. Although if I get into a matchup with lots of heavies, it'll just wreck face like crazy. Like I'll just pull them in and just murder them and it'd be really, really awesome.
Yes.
I don't know that it's actually like a very good competitive list.
Yeah, that's fair. All right. Counterpoint, what went wrong? Were there any models in either of your lists you found just to be dead weight or that you wish, had you had a chance to do it over again, that you would swap something out for?
I don't know. I'm not in love with the pairing. I love Helena. I probably would prefer to pair her with something like Ron or Kaylissa in the future, just because those casters just kind of have more power.
Yeah, no question. So this is kind of an aside temporarily, but specifically with Helios, do you find that you're having difficulty remembering that he can shoot and do his melee attacks in kind of like janky combinations? Like you can shoot, punch, punch, shoot, shoot things, or is it something that you actually feel relatively comfortable with?
No, I have not had trouble forgetting that at all. It's the reason he's amazing, and so it's very, very central in my mind. But the problem though is that there are so many possibilities that I sit there for like 10 minutes at the beginning of my turn, thinking, okay, what am I going to do with Helios this turn? Because there's so much you can do. Like you can like trample, then punch, then shoot, or you could like walk up and shoot, then punch, or like you can just like the order that you can do stuff is just extremely flexible. Just that you can like you can even charge something and then shoot first and like pull something in and then like and then maybe shoot your charge target and push him out of your melee and then use all your attacks to kill something else that was out of your threat range. It just there's little clever things you can do like that are just weird.
You get things that are up to 6 inches out of your charge range, but I completely understand that brain drain of trying to figure out how to use Helios effectively. And then in your list that has two of them, you know, literally twice the problem where you're like, I can pull in something that is 18 inches theoretically across the board.
One thing I've had some trouble remembering is that he has those force gate abilities, which were initially the reason why I was so excited about Helios was because of those abilities that he can do. Like the one to give up free focus, or the one to give him more defense and poltergeist, or the one to give him the repulsor field that pushes things back an inch when I hit them. Like those are all really, really strong abilities. And I kind of forgot about them a lot of the time. Like there was one turn, and I don't remember which game it was, but where if I just remembered to put a repulsor field, then they wouldn't have been able to kill Helios because they would have been pushed away after two attacks. So,
It's very significant. My Stormstriders have the same rule, and it's saved its butt more times than I can recall.
It doesn't save against infantry, but it definitely saves you against anything with multiple attacks.
Yeah. Okay. So we've talked about the list changing, and then just overall about the pairing. You commented on the fact that you would rather do Helena plus one of the other A-casters, for lack of a better term, Kalis, Aran, Ozian. If you were forced to stick with Alara, is Alara plus Helena actually a good pairing, or do you think Alara needs to be somebody else?
They make a fine pairing. Helena is kind of like an answer list for ranged lists, so like Alara doesn't like to play in the guns, because she doesn't have any defensive tech whatsoever.
Right.
And Helena just doesn't care at all. You can shoot her all day long, and she doesn't care at all. So they do make a good pair. I don't know if I like this double Colossal list or not. I mean, it is a ball-busting list in certain matchups.
Yep.
But I'm wondering if you're maybe just better off with a more balanced Alara list. Maybe like one Colossal, but then like some heavies and some units and stuff. It turns out that like ghostly boundless charge sentinels with scything touch on one of them can really actually wreck the face of something. And that's just really good. You know, PS-14 sentinels that can charge 12 inches through stuff is pretty good. So I miss a bit having more diversity in the LR list, just having the Helioses with the Stormfalls to back them up. I don't know. It's a fun list. I kind of like it, but I've only played it a few times, so I haven't had
you're
a chance
in to like really with see it. You're not really in love with it.
Sure, that's what we get.
All right, fair enough. Okay, well, that's it for our second half Retribution podcast. So thank you very much, Nick, for, you know, what's the phrase? Taking that bullet, stepping on that landmine, jumping on that grenade. There we go. Jumping on that grenade for us.
That's the one.
Before we sign off, Nick, what do you got on the painting table?
I have
Odd Second Helios.
I mean, I'm working on that, but I also just picked up my unit of Thorn Gun Mages.
Nice.
I got Major Harrison Gibbs as well to give them.
Oh, so jealous.
And I also picked up I finally picked up a second heavy rifle team. I've been playing Rep for like 2 years. Oh, I mean, we've been playing more, wait, no, 3 years now, maybe. No,
sorry, Nick, longer than that. You just cut out. You just picked up what?
I just picked up my second heavy rifle team.
Ah, very cool.
Which, yeah, I mean, it's a long time coming, and they're actually good now.
Yes.
So I'm glad to finally have that thing. And what else was it? Oh, yeah. I was dojoing just, like, a sweet Ashlyn list. Basically, my first intention was, like, I'm going to take Ashlyn and everything Laylee's. Yes. So I just took Ashlyn and then Rocinante, who isn't Laylee's, but I took him anyway. Yeah. And then just, like, all the Laylee's models, including, like, Gaston with a Vanguard, because it's a Laylee's. And then mm-hmm. just, like, topped it up with, like, Steelheads and some Nomads or whatever. And it looked like a pretty fun list.
So do you have one unit of Thorngun Mages, or you have two?
Two in that list, yeah. Ooh. I only have one, though, so I need to buy another one.
Yeah, I just ordered a bunch of stuff off Privateer Press, but I ordered it the day before the Thorngun Mages became available, and so now I have to wait. And
The sculpts, by the way, are amazing. I don't know who did, but they look beautiful.
They do look really good.
They really look beautiful. I'm still annoyed that there are single box models. Black 13, by the way, 10 points versus the Thorngun Mages, 9 points, and they have 5 boxes each, so fuck you, Signar. I mean, the reason is because they're characters, but still.
Yeah. Yeah, you can take 2 units of your Thorngun Mages. I can't take 2 units of Black 13.
This is true. I still think they should have 5 boxes, though. They have paper armor.
Yes. Yes. 14-11?
Yeah.
I am looking forward to getting some Thorngun Mages in my Signar, because now that my ATGM, my beloved ATGM, are an unplayable mess, the Thorngun Mages are still really good.
So. Yeah, no, I like them.
All right. As for me, on my painting table, I have a Grenadier and Savio, which both need to be based, but are otherwise completely painted. And with that, I am 100% painted and based for OTC.
Nice.
And I just picked up a box of Aelith Proxy Mark IIs. My other Privateer Press stuff is on its way. And that includes Fiora 3, Eye of Truth, Gibbs, and a Sloan model, because I hate her sculpt with the gun pointing up. So I got a second Sloan model so I can sculpt her with her gun being held in a rational fashion.
Cool.
Okay. Well, that's it, folks. As always, if you want to get a hold of us, do let us know any feedback you have for how Nick played or Nick's lists. Or...
Oh, man, it was so bad. I need more reps.
More reps with rats. Do let us know through any of the standard methods. And on that note, thanks for listening to Combos, Mike. Now let's move on to the second half of the podcast that we've already recorded.
Oh, I see.
Because the news and the announcement goes in the first
half. Got it. Yeah.
Okay.